what's it like being interviewed by Colbert? What sort of preparation does he give you?
None.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast number 357, Outtakes and Extras. Earlier this summer, I got to talk to several people about specific things, and as frequently happens, we talked about other things that didn't really fit in terms of time or because it was off topic or whatever. So this week, I wanted to play you some outtakes from those conversations. First, I talked to actor Reed Diamond back in June about his work on Joss Whedon's terrific film version of Much Ado About Nothing. Reed and I know each other from his days improvising at the IO West in Los Angeles, so I asked him about how his improv training helps his work generally and his performance in the Brad Pitt Jonah Hill movie Moneyball in particular.
Why did you want to start improvising in LA? Because I just thought it took such guts for you, because improv is you get up there and it's like hitting in baseball. A lot of times you don't hit anything, you strike out. And yet you were at that time well-known, a well-known face from Homicide and a couple of other things. So did that enter into your thinking at all?
You know, it was such a magical time when I first went to the I.O. because I was friends, you know, with Dee and with your wife and all these amazing people who'd moved from Chicago to L.A. In high school, one of my best friends, a guy you might know, Carlos Jacott.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, so Carlos and I, and he went out to Chicago after college. But we used to improvise all the time in high school. And then at some point in my career, I don't know if I decided that I was going to be a dramatic actor or other people decided for me, or I just started making money that way. But I sort of like left the path because I'd always played like the third comic part in whatever musical it was. I was always much more interested in that. I mean, originally I got into acting so I could showcase the goofy, dorky parts of myself and be lauded for them. Mm-hmm. You know, that was originally what appealed to me about acting. And I don't know who got in my ear where I decided I was supposed to be a leading man or supposed to be serious, which are things that I don't think they're necessarily my strong suits. And I went to the I.O. in L.A. with all these amazing people from Chicago who were just the warmest hearted, sweetest and funniest people I'd ever encountered. And for a year, I think I just watched the shows. And then I was like, oh, I want to take class here. I'd like to do this again. And so I just started taking class, and it was sort of a natural fit, and I came alive. And then suddenly I got to be on stage. And I have to say, it was me improvising at the I.O. and taking the classes there. That was the most important thing that's happened to my acting in my entire career and in my entire studies, because I was really at a point in my career where I was just like so in my head in my acting. I got really like just unhealthily intellectual about it, or I would overthink. And what improvisation showed me that like from one word, I could make an hour show.
Wow.
From one suggestion. So I was like, and also like, I could be the king of France without going like, what did the king of France eat for breakfast that morning? Right? I was like, I am the king of France. So, and being that facile and knowing and not being so precious about stuff. And that's how, since then, when I work on camera and I'm working well, I just say like before action, I just sort of get myself to the top of the ski slope. And then on action, I just let it ride. Hmm. And I just, and it's taken the pressure off. It's also like, you know, what I most enjoy about any performance or about acting myself is being surprised. So I want to, and I try to incorporate that as much into, my on-camera work and my scripted work as possible. So it didn't really feel like any act of bravery or any sort of like that I was in some sort of career suicide, because A, coming from the stage, also like I'm natural ham bone. So like being on stage, I've only recently become comfortable in front of a camera. I've always felt much more comfortable on stage than And then working with all those amazing people. I mean, yes, there are times where you're like, I can't keep batting, 100. Right. This show, I'm going for 750, so sometimes that could be a little daunting. And I think that's why the pre-show beer always helps.
Always, always. I'm a big advocate of that.
Yes. The to get you out of your conscious mind and your that inner critic. But no, I mean, there's my experience at the I.O. and meeting all those wonderful people who are still my friends, and the reason you and I are talking today, it's so magical and I'm so indebted. And whenever I meet young actors and they're talking about the classes they're in or the teacher they're studying with, I'm like, well, I really recommend you should go take class at the I.O.
Yeah.
Because I go, that's helped me more than anything.
Was it fun shooting the scenes in Moneyball? I have this sense that Brad and Jonah Hill are sort of improvisatory actors as well.
Well, this is a perfect segue because I hadn't done a feature film in a long time. And so, they're like, do you want to do this movie, this scene with Brad Pitt and Jonah Hill? And I'm like, absolutely. And, this amazing director who I was such a huge fan of, Bennett Miller, directed, Capote and all that. So I'm used to television where you do like six scenes a day, you're doing like 10 pages a day, and there's no rehearsal. Well, this thing, we had a couple of days of rehearsal for this one scene. We shot the scene on the first day of shooting. We had a couple of days of rehearsal, and everyone, Brad would come in with his ideas for the scene, and Bennett would come in with his ideas for the scene. And I was like, rehearsal? This is crazy. I just want to, let's just go. But on the day of shooting, we improvised that entire scene for like 12 hours.
Wow.
And we were shooting it on film, but we would shoot until the mags ran out, and Bennett would sit underneath the camera. And I remember, so we shot the first half of the scene on Brad, and I'm just improvising, and it was great. It was so free, and anything we do, I mean, it got really crazy and got very real. And but I remember, like, at lunch, some of the people some of the background guys who were on Brad's side, they're like, man, you're doing great. I'm like, that's amazing. I go, no, it hasn't happened yet because we haven't shot my coverage, and I don't know if I can improvise for another 6 hours. But that was, that's the I.O. in a nutshell. Like, I knew I could improvise, and I felt really comfortable, and Brad was like such a goer, and it was the epitome of yes and. And I also think that's why that movie was such a – I love that movie so much, and harken back to those great movies that I love from the 70s, because every performance felt really real. And I think by improvising it and still always coming back to the text, and really what you see in the movie is it's probably 75% of the text. But because we'd gotten to that place where everyone is so comfortable and improvising, that it felt really real. It didn't feel like a scene.
Cool. Right. You were there.
This is always the goal.
Always,
and Brad Pitt is dreamy and super sweet and an awesome actor.
One of my serious, I'm always frowning parts on TV was I fired Mandy Patinkin on Chicago Hope. It was his last episode, the last shot of his last episode, the last shot of the day. So they shot Hector Elizondo's coverage, they shot my coverage, then they turned around and like did two takes of each of us, turned around on Mandy. He must have done 15, 17 takes.
Yes. Right.
And I'm sitting there going, they're not going to turn around again on me, are they? Am I going, well, on this one I went, and this one I went, No, of course they didn't. But I do have,
yes.
But I did have, there was a great moment where he went off. He went off and he went, and I went, he's completely gone off, but I heard something that sounded vaguely like my cue. And so I threw in my line, and he looked right at me. He said, you shut up. And then he goes, give me that again. I'm sorry for yelling. And then they bring out a cake and we're done and we're getting our makeup off. And he comes up to me and he just shakes my hand. He gets right in my face. He said, it was great looking in your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
and he said, and I'm really sorry. I went, are you kidding? I'm going to be telling this story the rest of my life.
Absolutely.
Hi, this is Brian Gallivan, a.k.a. the Sassy Gay Friend. What are you doing? You're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, you stupid bitch.
Where can you RSC the RSC? This week, you can see us perform the complete works of William Shakespeare in two countries, Great Britain and Singapore. Then next week, we'll be in Hong Kong. And in the next couple of weeks, we'll be all over the UK and the US performing Shakespeare, all the great books abridged, and the complete history of comedy abridged at the Cincinnati Playhouse in the Park in November and December. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office venue and ticket information. And now back to another outtake. This is a short one, and it'll probably take longer to introduce it than to actually play it. But in August, I spoke with journalist Robin Wright about her book Rock the Casbah, Rage and Rebellion in the Muslim World. In addition to everything else, Robin has appeared as a guest twice, I think, on the Colbert Report, so I was dying to ask her about that.
What's it like being interviewed by Colbert? What sort of preparation does he give you?
None. I mean, like every show, they do a pre-interview, but I have never in my 40 years of doing interviews ever had a single question asked by a booker or a producer that ended up on the show. And Colbert comes in the green room beforehand and he says, you know, I'm a character on the show. I play an asshole. Just ignore me and keep talking. And he's very funny. He said to me at one point on the first time I did the show for a previous book, he said, "You've covered 12 wars. Which was your favorite?" You know, you really have to think fast about what's a favorite war.
Yeah, gee, they're all so good in their own ways.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, except it's not really it, as you'll see in just a minute. Send us your outtakes via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also post comments on many of our website pages, and you can post reviews on iTunes. You can interact with other fans at our website and our Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, outtake valve Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Rebecca Oberg. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Brian Gallivan. Look for his sassy gay friend videos on YouTube. And thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 357/1071st of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. And now, as promised, I will leave you with this extra special bonus feature, our special reduced workout that we recorded for the New York Times website back in June. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. I'm Austin Titchener.
I'm Reed Martin, and we are
two-thirds of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. And you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, special New York Times website edition,
Reduced Shakespeare Workout.
Greetings, New York Times well readers. In case you're one of the billions of people who don't know who we are, the Reduced Shakespeare Company has reduced the complete works of William Shakespeare, all of American history, the good book, and all the great books by cutting out all the minor characters and unimportant subplots and getting right to the sex and the killing, which is what people want to see.
That's right. We're known for taking large things and making them smaller, which is probably what you are trying to do right now.
So gallop apace, you fiery-footed steeds.
What better way to start your Reduced Shakespeare workout than with a little iambic pentameter. Iambic pentameter is a 10-syllable line of blank verse, most commonly in the rhythm da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
It's what noted Shakespearean and wizard Ian McKellen calls the rhythm of the heart, and we want to get your heart racing.
I know not how I have deserved to run.
Tis sport to maul a runner.
Run, run, Orlando, carve on every tree.
My fortified spirit, now bid me run.
For lovers ever run before the clock.
The course of true love never did run smooth.
Blow wind, crack your cheeks.
A horse, my kingdom for a horse!
Now, we should point out that although lines of blank verse often have 10 syllables, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, they don't always. Like when Beethoven did it, it went dot, 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 dot. And if a line of blank verse has 11 syllables, it has what's referred to as a feminine ending.
As Shakespearean scholars, we are always on the lookout for nicely constructed feminine endings.
Always.
Also, Shakespeare refers to at least 50 different sports and games in his 37 plays. Some of them are still familiar to people today, things like archery, bowling, chess, billiards, hunting, tennis, wrestling. But many Shakespearean pastimes have been long forgotten, which is really a shame because, frankly, most of them sound amusingly and vaguely dirty. Or maybe it's just me. Here are a few. Cherry pit, cockfighting, duns in the mire.
It's not just you.
Then there was fast and loose, which was a gambling game, sometimes also known as pricking the belt.
Something pricked this way comes.
Mm-hmm. Shakespeare also mentions handy dandy, novum, not to be confused with ovum, the popular troll my dame, which consisted of rolling small balls into holes at one end of the game board, shove groat, and shoeing the wild mare.
Ooh, is that what the kids are calling it these days?
No, that's what the kids called it in those days, which conveniently brings us to the Elizabethan Sports Report.
Friends, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. Dateline 1603. In the NBL, the National Bear Baiting League, the Bears literally killed the Bulldogs 5-0. In falconry, former Atlanta Falcon Michael Vick also literally killed Bulldogs. Too soon? There's been a lopsided deal in the equestrian world, with Richard III trading his kingdom for a horse. All's well did not end well for Ophelia, who failed her swimming trials, and it was much ado about nothing for Lady Macbeth of the Westminster Dog Show when her dog Spot was thrown out. Damn Spot. Thank you so much. Thanks for listening to this special New York Times website edition of the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. You can find more episodes of the RSC podcast on iTunes or at our website, ReducedShakespeare.com.
You can also friend us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or check out our international tour dates over at ReducedShakespeare.com.
And just for listening this far, we'll give you our Reduced Weight Loss Guide. Are you ready?
Eat less. Exercise more.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to ReduceShakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less. So much less.